grandfathers, as people of the community, but as business people for our economy in the state.
And do you see the threat there primarily being domestic or internationally?
I think it's a combination. Look, there's very few companies in Illinois of any size or desire to grow that aren't looking at the global competition. It isn't the competition necessarily from Wisconsin. It is from, you know, all parts of the world. And if you want to sell your products and you want to be on the cutting edge of new products, that's cutting edge versus someone in Thailand or China or wherever, or Europe or India. And you also see in this, obviously, we look at our situation vis-a-vis other states.
Well, the report starts with early childhood education, and that actually seems to be one of the few bright spots in Illinois. Can you talk a little bit about what Illinois is getting right in that area?
We're obviously one of the leaders in the country in terms of making sure that three-year-olds and four-year-olds have access to and are going to pre-kindergarten. And that's great news. And there's study after study after study about what a huge impact that will have on a child's longer-term success. What's a little troubling if you look below that ranking, the fact that we're, you know, first in the country for four-year-olds, for example, is that we're still, the state-funded pre-K is still only serving less than a third of eligible children. So while it's terrific to be ahead, you sort of feel like you're the tallest midget instead of feeling like you're really serving as many children as you need and you want. And what's particularly troubling there is that with the budget pressures in Springfield, the amount of funding available and therefore the amount of slots available is starting to move in the wrong direction.
You mentioned the budget, and that's obviously going to be a recurring theme, I would guess, to our conversation today. You know, a lot of improvements that people talk about would require additional funding, and that seems to be not something that will be forthcoming from Illinois state government anytime soon.
But let me just, you know, as you know, the vast majority of funding for education is at the local level. The state's resources are stretched. The problem with our education system and the difficulty, there is not a correlation between that, a direct correlation, and saying we're not spending enough. We are spending a very decent amount of money. The state is not as competitive as some other states, but it's prioritizing and getting that dealt with. But not you know, the reforms that talked about here and those advocacy groups out there, including obviously Advance Illinois, the need is not all about money.
I read that in your report that only 71% of students who enroll in high school, ninth grade, will end up graduating. Of course, President Obama called for in his State of the Union address this year, raising the dropout age, and Governor Quinn tried to do that, but Illinois failed to pass such a law this year. Is that something that Illinois should be looking at?
You know, I think that one of I don't know if we should or we shouldn't. What I worry is we could end up having a big distracting tussle about that, when the reality is, whether you raise that at level or not, the key is, are we engaging students? Are we giving them effective instruction? And are we making school a place they want to be, where they see the relevance and they're getting what they need?
Just keeping them in the room shouldn't necessarily be the goal. It should be what's going on in the room that they're in. And as Robin said, that they want to be there. And if they are there, either because they're forced to be there or because they really want to be, when they walk out of there, it's a positive for them that helps them, you know, in the next stage of their life.
We're talking about Advance Illinois' report card on public education in the state. Bill Daly is the group's co-chair. Robin Staines is Advance Illinois' director. One of the other things in the report talks about reading skills, that 12% of African-American students, 18% of Latino students, and 16% of low-income students are, that's the number that are able to read proficiently in fourth grade. Should this be something that is more looked at as more of a crisis? I mean, we talk in Illinois about the pension crisis and the funding crisis. I mean, that seems like a stunningly low percentage.
It is a stunningly low rate. And when you look at the increase in the number of schools and school districts around the state where the percent of low-income students is growing substantially, that if you take that model, which some people would say, oh, would have been Chicago for years, and you begin to move that throughout the state, that is a crisis. That is going to be a real problem, and you can't replicate those numbers. You shouldn't be replicating those sort of horrendous numbers throughout the state.
But let me also say, not only are those shocking numbers, they are shocking in and of themselves, but they're particularly shocking when you consider that third grade reading is one of the single most reliable indicators of longer-term success. If you've got a child reading where they should be by third or fourth grade, their odds of going on to complete high school and do well go dramatically up. And so think about what that suggests for the longer-term prognosis. So we've got the takeaway for Advance Illinois, and we think the takeaway for the state, is that we've got a lot of work to do. And more to the point, it can't be small, tweaky, on-the-edges work. We've got serious, sustained work, or we're going to be exactly where we've been for the last decade. Because worse than those numbers haven't moved in over a decade.
Are we putting too much pressure on the schools to try and be the sort of last resort social safety net for a lot of kids?
Well, look, there is, as you know, a loud debate out there about the role of poverty and what can schools do until you've mitigated and addressed some of those issues. I think one of the things that we've got growing evidence for, and certainly we try to emphasize in the report, is that there's a lot we can do within the schoolhouse walls. That if you set up a supportive, rigorous school environment with terrific principals and teachers, you can get an enormous amount accomplished no matter what a child's socioeconomic circumstances may be, no matter what community circumstances they may be coming from. And what we have to figure out is how to do that more systematically across the state so that instead of being able to have examples of that we can point to, but that are still exceptions, that we're able to do a much better job for every child in every school as a matter of course.
And what ultimately is the goal of Advance Illinois? When can you fold up shop and say we're done? We've gotten done what we need to
get
done.
I'll let you handle that, Bill.
If you look at this report card and you look at the items we mentioned, I think there's a pretty very strong likelihood that Advance Illinois is in existence for a long time. You know, in the perfect world, you know, when we put out a report card saying that every category that we judge was an A plus. And then I think you'd probably say, you've got a pretty smart group of people out there that have done this right. But I think that based upon this and the ever-changing world is probably highly unlikely in our lifetimes. I don't know how old you are, Brian, but I think it will be quite a while. And we are focused on this being long-term.
Bill Daly is a co-chair of the board of Advance Illinois. He's also a former U.S. Secretary of Commerce and former chief of staff to President Barack Obama. Robin Staines is the director of Advance Illinois, and I am Brian Mackey.
Programming on WILL is made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, presenting 90 Miles on Saturday, December 1st, featuring Stefan Harris, David Sanchez, and Nicholas Payton for a celebration of Cuban and American-rooted music. For more information, visit KrannertCenter.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 16th of November, 2012. It's the birthday of W.C. Handy, born Florence, Alabama, 1873, the son and grandson of Methodist ministers who did not approve of his going into the music business. They expected him to become a minister. He became a piano player, went on the road with bands, wound up in Memphis, and he became the first person to write down the music that would become known as the blues. His first song, Memphis Blues. Later, his most famous song, St. Louis Blues. He was the first person to write sheet music for it and to make it accessible for mass consumption. It's the birthday of the novelist Andrea Barrett, born Boston, 1954, author of fiction about botanists, oceanographers, geologists. Her novel, The Voyage of the Narwhal, came out in 1998. It's the birthday of the novelist Chinua Achebe, born in Ogidi, Nigeria, in 1930. His great-uncle was the man who first received European missionaries into his village. His father was an early convert to Christianity. Achebe, the boy, was baptized as a Christian, spent his childhood reading the Bible every day. Went to a school run by Europeans, read Charles Dickens and Jonathan Swift and Joseph Conrad. His novel, Things Fall Apart, came out in 1958, one of the first novels ever written about European colonization from the point of view of the colonized. And it's the birthday of the novelist José Saramago, born in a little village northeast of Lisbon in 1922. Parents couldn't afford an academic school, so he went to a technical school, became an auto mechanic. His first novel, Land of Sin, came out when he was 24 years old. Then he stopped writing fiction for the next 30 years, until in his mid-50s, unemployed, blacklisted by the government for his political activities, he went back to writing fiction, his novel Raised from the Ground, about three generations of a peasant family, and his novel Blindness in 1997. A year later, 1998, José Saramago won the Nobel Prize for Literature. Here's a poem for today by George Bilgear at the Vietnam Memorial. The last time I saw the name Paul Castle, it was printed in gold on the wall above the showers in the boys' locker room next to the school record for the mile. I don't recall his time, but the year was 1968, and I can look across the infield of memory to see him on the track, legs flashing, body bending slightly beyond the pack of runners at his back. He couldn't spare a word for me, 2 years younger, junior varsity, and hardly worth the waste of breath. He owned the hallways, a cool blonde at his side, and aimed his interests further down the line than we could guess. Now, reading the name again, I see us standing in the showers, naked kids beneath his larger, comprehensive force, the ones who trail obscurely in the wake of the swift, like my shadow on this gleaming wall. At the Vietnam Memorial, a poem by George Bilgear, used here by permission of the poet on the Writer's Almanac, supported by PBS, presenting The Dust Bowl, a new film from director Ken Burns, starts Sunday at 8, 7 Central on PBS. And by the Poetry Foundation, iPad users can download the three most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012, at poetryfoundation.org. And